All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. And this says Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is only 52 degrees, very dark, cloudy, and rainy here in upstate New York. It's one of those mornings that you'd like to stay in bed. And I actually considered it. So where do we leave off? Yesterday, we titled the show Big Pharma, Placebo Power, and DNA Sterilization Vaccines. Yeah, those poor little kitties. Those vaccines, it still is haunting me. You know, we hit on some really disturbing stuff yesterday looking at, we started out with the TPP and some of the crap that they're pulling, giving protections to Big Pharma for their new biologics drugs, which we all know is the switch-flipping DNA, RNA, mad science, gone mad science. But we also looked at how amazingly so in research they have found that the placebo effect, telling you that you were taking something that was going to fix you up just fine, happened to get a lot stronger over the last few years, especially markedly so in the United States. And we have postulated that it was because they did direct marketing now to the consumer for drugs on the TV. Yes, the brainwashing idiot box. And lo and behold, in the study, that is what they were postulating as well. So don't discount the power of brainwashing. People are going to line up, and that's what they want. They want you to line up for these 21st century cures that haven't been tested in the long term and become willing guinea pigs to this game that they're playing. They are turning the American public into a very large petri dish, and then they are going to sell your information for $29.95 a month, which I don't know. I just always pick that amount out of the air, but maybe it's $129.99 a month per person. Back to Big Pharma for their research and development line item so they can remove it from their budget. Means profits for everybody. We heard the CEO of that one pharmaceutical company yesterday. I don't remember what the name was, but it started with a V, talking about how it isn't about cures for you and me. It is about taking care of the shareholders and making sure that they make a profit. So for anyone who still believes out there that any of these cures for cancer or these wondrous discoveries that they're making with your tax dollars sprinkled all over at the universities and the hospitals to be working on the mad science, it's not for us. It is not for us in the end. It is for the people. Once this is all worked out and we're sure that you don't grow arms out of the back of your head, it will be for the people with the money. And I got to tell you, speaking about the people for the money, I don't know out there how many people have been paying attention to any type of health insurance costs, but this is the time of year typically where the new packages come out for the next year, and you have to kind of look through what the offers are for health insurance. And since Obamacare passed a few years ago, you really haven't heard too much after the major cluster Fs that had happened in the beginning and people screaming about how they couldn't get insurance. Their insurance was dropped. The prices went through the roof. And then notice everything got really quiet. Well, I think I'm going to do some sort of at least survey or expose on this, because I have to say never in my 25 or even close to probably 30 years now that I have had health insurance on my own, I have never before seen what I am seeing now. Typically, over the last 2 years since Obamacare passed, first thing that I've seen is that now there's all of a sudden, instead of you pay your monthly fee, you pick which package, you pay your monthly fee, you pay your fees for if you decide to go see the poison man in the white jacket, which I haven't in the last few years. But if you decide to go, you know, you have like a $15 copay or a $30 copay. Prescriptions are a copay. Everything is a copay. But typically, you just pay your monthly cost for health insurance, and then the rest is covered. Well, the last 2 years, I'll tell you what, I almost died when I discovered back a few weeks ago that the plan that was for this year, which, hey, nobody's used it this year, has a $4,500 off the top pay before the insurance pays for anything. I was like, what? How did that happen? And this new one for 2016 people is now $12,000 out of pocket before the insurance company is going to kick in. There's still copays, so I guess, you know, preventative health care is covered. But if you have any catastrophic illness and you end up in the hospital for any length of time, who's got 12,000 bucks? That's all I was saying. Who's got 12,000 bucks? Nobody. Well, maybe some people, but most people don't, especially in the climate that we're in. And I'm going to point to Obamacare as being the cause of all of this. So I need to dig into seeing exactly what's covered. And this is going to be my next few weeks. I'm really going to put some teeth into this. What's covered? What's not? What does $12,000 off the top mean? And how is this being influenced by Obamacare? Is that money now going to pay for all the uninsured that they dumped off the healthcare rolls? Am I now being expected to finance healthcare for everyone? Because shit, maybe I should get on Obamacare and get it for free. You know, this is insane. So I don't know. When we start looking at all this precision medicine, and in the very beginning we had looked at like the costs, and they were like, oh, you know, we're going to spend all this tax money that we've been sprinkling all over to find these miraculous cures. Yes, it's going to cost, though, for biologics, for these new mad science gone mad cures, hundreds of thousands of dollars per dose. Is that the new normal, that you're going to be able to get cured if you can pay for it? Because I'm telling you what, I think that it is. So let's dangle a carrot, though. Let's make this the new way for people to spend their money, since we've saturated the market with our mobile devices and all of our new technologies. Let's move technology into the healthcare space, and let's take this narcissistic society that we've created and use that to focus the narcissism now on being healthy in healthcare, right? 21st century white room, eat, what do they call those? Oh, we looked at that with Nestle, with their Nestle department, where they are going to be now developing foods with your health in mind. Yes, no more high fructose corn syrup. We're going to make everything into a 3D printed nutraceutical. That's what they were calling them, nutraceutical. So we can keep the healthcare costs down, and we can have healthy people. You can wear your Apple iWatch that tracks your heart rate and how many steps you've walked in a day, and send that back to your doctor so they can keep tabs on you. Or you can get your new Google, I don't even remember what they were calling it, Google Calico, part of their new Alphabet conglomerate, was going to be doing even more, where they could take little samples of your sweat and figure out what levels of nutrients you had in your blood, if you were low on something or high on something, and send you an alert. Trust me, people, this 21st century world is not going to be what anything that we are used to. This is going to be like Buck Rogers in the 21st century. And speaking of Buck Rogers in the 21st century, I'd mentioned this yesterday. We had looked at, and I couldn't remember the name yesterday, but we were toward the end of the show when we were going through all this, I had mentioned this whole thing where we had Congress people selling 21st century medicine in an ad as how wonderful this is going to be, but I couldn't remember the name of the pact, and it is called the 21st Century Cures Act. It passed on July 10th of 2015. It was approved by the House. It is now up in front of the Senate. And basically what this was going to do was fast track all this FDA quote unquote research, which we've already established, all the fraudulent research that's been happening all these years in these published journals, that we can't trust anything. We already also established how the FDA and the USDA really isn't keeping us safe, because there's all kinds of things like cloned meat that potentially is out there. I don't know. They gave it the rubber stamp and said they don't have to label it. There's mad cow that's floating around out there that, you know, there was a lawsuit between one of the cattle providers that wanted to be able to put that they had tested for mad cow disease on their label, and there was a lawsuit between the Bush administration and this cattle producer, and the Bush administration won with Supreme Court. So there was no labeling that was going to be allowed that said that they tested for mad cow. We also had the GMO, country of origin labeling that was now erased, so they don't have to tell you where your meat comes from. And I mean, we all see where this is leading. This is leading to complete and utter ignorance. Don't worry about what's in your food because we know what's good for you. But we then dug into all of this mad science and connected up the technologies between the stuff that's going into the newfangled vaccines, which aren't even going to be vaccines anymore. They're going to be little dissolvable micro needles that you won't even feel on patches. They'll be intranasal and, oops, they'll be in your food. We also then discovered that the same technology that was being used in the vaccines, RNAi, DNA switch flipping, is being used as some of the new technologies in the GMO foods and crops for pest reduction. So I want to refresh everyone's memory, and hopefully this doesn't knock me off air. Please let me know if it does, but I'm going to attempt. I didn't attempt to connect before the show because the last time we tried this, I didn't make it then when it locked me all up. So hold on 1 second. We are going to try to, and I can't remember my name, we're going to try to connect this desktop to Skype, and we are going to listen, and hello, let's ring, let's ring, let's ring, maybe it'll let me answer. Oh, and look at, my speakers are plugged in, all right. Let's see if I can answer, and it's going real slow, but I think I'm still broadcasting. I'll have to sing, do-do-do-do-do-do, I'll have to sing, do-do-do-do-do-do, maybe it's thinking about it, Sky says not responding, hold on, oh my god, and you know, this is even after a reboot. Oh, I have the telltale hiss. The telltale hiss that Skype has connected. Everything looks gray, but I think it's connected. All right. So maybe if we can do this, let's give this a shot. So the 21st Century Cures Act, this is now Congress pushing for us to jump on the bandwagon. And no, let's not do any more testing or any type of 20-year long-term testing on any of these newfangled drugs. Let's just stick both feet in, face first, and jump into the mad science bandwagon, accelerate these cures, because poor people are dying, and these cures are sitting in research development too long. All right, let's hope so.
Well, hello there. I'm Fred Upton.
And I'm Diana DeGette.
And I'm a Republican from Michigan.
And I'm a Democrat from Colorado.
You know, we know that you've probably heard a lot about the gridlock, dysfunction, and division in Congress for sure.
It's true. We do have our differences. Fred and I don't agree on everything, but we do agree on this. America can be, it must be, the healthcare innovation capital of the world.
You know, you may not realize it, but together, we have already accomplished a lot to improve public health with a whole number of bills supporting medical research enacted over the last couple of years. I'm also proud to say that I helped lead the charge back in the 1990s, bipartisan effort, to double the funding of the National Institutes of Health.
Ding, the National Institute of Health. Now, we've talked about all kinds of federal initiatives that have been passed over the last year or two. Just like he said, lots of money poured in to the brain initiative, to the genomics initiatives, to the bioeconomy blueprint, where they're funding DARPA research ad nauseum and sprinkling it throughout all these different universities and hospitals. Yes, we have an entire nationwide consortium of mad scientists working on this right now with our tax dollars.
This is a good start, but now it's time to go bigger.
You know, in the 21st century, healthcare innovation is happening at lightning speed. From the mapping of the human genome to the risk of personalized medicines that are linked to advances in molecular medicine, we've seen constant breakthroughs that are changing the face of disease treatment, management, and certainly cures.
Yeah, so we have too. I mean, every single day, that's how I do my show. Mad science gone mad, discoveries of things that just make you go, oh my God, this is the end of the human race as we know it. And what these people want to do now is put it on a fast track to get it into your kids, your Nana, and you.
Health research is moving quickly. But the federal drug and device approval apparatus is still, in many ways, the relic of another era.
So they're not moving fast enough for all the criticisms that we have for the FDA and all of their shortfalls. Apparently, they are still standing in the way somewhere, so we better get rid of all of the stops.
We have dedicated scientists and bold leaders at agencies like the NIH and the FDA. But when our laws don't keep pace with innovation, we all lose out.
Innovation equals mad science.
So if we want to save more lives, and we do, and keep the country the leader in medical innovation and the jobs here, we've got to make sure that there's not a major gap between the science of cures and the way that we actually regulate these therapies.
That's why, for the first time ever, we in Congress are going to take a comprehensive look at what steps we can take to accelerate the pace of cures in America.
I mean, honestly, people, I'm looking at this, and I mean, let's tie Obamacare back into this. We now have the federal government right in the fucking middle of your health care, determining what is good for you and what isn't. We have the CDC. We have my daughter's pediatrician with a smile on her face pointing to the new CDC schedule, showing how New York State has made this new untested meningitis vaccine mandatory for my child to attend schools in New York as of this year. And we have RFK Jr. stepping out going, but wait a minute, there are way more side effects and damages done to children from this vaccine than people who end up with meningitis in New York State. But hey, don't worry about it, because now we're going to have Vaccinate All People Act of 2015, the 21st Century Cures Act, and all kinds of other things coming from a federal perspective to make you an unwilling guinea pig. But hey, we got to brainwash you first with commercials to make sure you step up and you don't fight the system.
We're looking at the full arc of this process, from the discovery of clues in basic science, to streamlining the drug and device development process, to unleashing the power of digital medicine and social media at the treatment delivery phase.
Hey, and can I tell you, too, is another part of my health insurance this year, something I've never, ever seen before, but I told you guys it was coming. We used to sell these networks 10 years ago. We get a $5 consultation with an online doctor. Now, come on, people. Talk about insanity, and they will prescribe for you for anything that's non-emergency, an earache, a headache, a migraine, headache/migraine, a sore throat, or anything like that. They will send you a prescription to your pharmacy by just seeing you over the computer.
You know, all that is so exciting, but we know that we don't have all the answers. That's why we're asking questions first. We want to listen, and we are. We want to know how to close the gaps between advances in scientific knowledge about cures and the regulatory policies that are created to save more lives.
How can we make sure our best scientists spend more of their time in the laboratory discovering cures rather than just writing grant proposals?
Yes, rather than just writing grant proposals. We don't want them in the lab testing this stuff. We got enough poor people who are sick already from all the poisons we've been feeding you, who are desperate for a cure. So screw testing in the lab. Let's get those desperate people to line up, because that's who they prey upon, and use them as our R&D. Put them, slice them, and dice them into the database, because guess what? Then we can sell it for $29.95 a month to anyone who wants access to that free research and development.
How can we foster even more collaboration using new technological resources like cloud computing or social media?
Yeah, and let's put it all out into the cloud. They want to encourage everybody to get into the cloud, because once it's in the cloud, it is owned by the alphabet agencies.
Are there new ways to improve the process of developing and approving new drugs and devices?
You know, our understanding of disease at the genetic level can certainly help reduce the cost and quicken the pace of clinical trials. That means patients potentially have faster access to those treatments. What do we need to make this happen?
Keep things moving and constantly improving. We must then capture the impact of these new drugs and devices and share that data with researchers, caregivers, and patients.
Right. Here's the thing. We can't have drugs sitting in phase one development, not yet approved for being used on people. So what they were doing before was orchestrating some sort of quote unquote emergency to then get things to be able to be rubber stamped to be utilized under the Project BioShield, which was passed under the Bush administration. That meant all these experimental drugs that were sitting in phase one and phase two, not yet proven safe to be used in humans, could be used in the case of an emergency. So let's think about Ebola. Let's think about the quote-unquote swine flu outbreak. But you know what? They can't keep doing that. So let's just pass this 21st Century Cures Act and let's get everyone begging their doctors and healthcare providers for some of these new treatments, because we're desperate and it might just save us. And if not, you know what? Give it up for the good of everybody, because you will forever be known in the history of humanity as one of the guinea pigs that allowed them to come up with some sort of cure for, oh, I don't know, cancer or Alzheimer's.
Working together, that'll ensure that the discovery process continues to move forward, constantly improving and learning.
And by this collaborative effort, asking these important questions and constantly challenging ourselves to always be doing more and doing better, we can put America on a swift trajectory to make the predominant diseases of today a thing of the past.
First discovery, then development, then delivery, and back again to discovery. We must never cease. Our efforts for 21st century cures is now underway.
Hide your children under your bed. That just gave me chills. It is underway. It is all stops pulled out. Look out, because people, everything, every horror that we have been talking about in regards to mad science gone mad has now become an edict of our federal government, and they are going to be pushing this all the way down to you and me. I want to read just a little bit of this mission. God, did this get my blood pressure up? Because I got to tell you, this is like one of my worst nightmares. And I just see people in white coats with masks and bright lights in your faces. And I mean, they're not even going to be now trying to force vaccines. It's all going to be done through nutraceuticals, all happy, fuzzy. And don't forget also, back, it was maybe 3 weeks ago, and I don't remember exactly what it was called, but the Obama administration had just created some new division, right, where they were going to have like a psychiatric or a psychology department helping them now spin some of these new programs to the public. And remember, it was the very same day that the White House made that announcement that the director for the National Institute of Mental Health stepped down, announced that he was leaving, and he was now going to go work for Google Alphabet. Yes, he was, in one of their longevity programs. So don't think that that is an accident. This PSYOP is going to be cranked up another few notches. All right, let me just read a little bit of the mission, and then we're going to continue here. This is mission. This is for the 21st Century Cures Act. Congress is working together, and maybe this is just a blurb of whatever they just said. Okay, go back down to the bottom. This is why, for the first time ever, we're taking a comprehensive look at what steps it is going to take to accelerate the pace of cures in America. And yeah, this is the same bullshit that they just blurbed out. It is a truly collaborative effort, and we want to make you healthy. I'm sure they want to make us healthy. So where we ended the show yesterday, I want to start here, and then we're going to spin this off. They now have a new pill that is going to act like your body has just done exercise. Scientists are making progress on an exercise pill that mimics the effects of working out. Being fit and healthy is great. And hold on, I got to disconnect Skype now because it's going to give me an echo. There we go. Being fit and healthy is great, but finding the motivation to hit the gym or get out on the bike continues to be a problem for many of us. So trying to reap the benefits of exercise without any of actual exercise is a challenge that scientists have been grappling with for years. But an international team of researchers has made some headway, creating a blueprint of the body's molecular reactions to exercise. They've managed to identify 1,000 molecular changes in skeletal muscles caused by exercise, and if they can figure out which of these biological modifications are the most significant, we'd be a step closer to the reality of having an exercise pill as an alternative to a real workout. So like I said yesterday, don't worry about getting your ass off the couch in front of the TV, because you can now just take this exercise pill and you will be buff all day long. You'll be like a 20-year-old at 50, which is the final plan of this. It's all about immortality. Remember, Kurzweil had said they want to treat aging like it is a disease and be able to cure it. Quote, we've created an exercise blueprint that lays the foundation for future treatments, and the end goal is to mimic the effects of exercise, says lead researcher Nolan Hoffman from the University of Sydney. It has long been thought that there were many signals elicited by exercise, but we were the first to create this map, and we now know the complexity. Four healthy male volunteers, yes, we said this, they stepped right up, and it even says this in the document, four healthy male volunteers were used as, ding ding, human guinea pigs for the experiment, offering muscle samples for both before and after an intense 10-minute stretch on an exercise bike. And these samples were then used by researchers to inform their report recently published in the journal Cell Metabolism. Of course, developing a drug that stimulates 1,000 molecular changes is no easy task, and that is why scientists' next step is to figure out which of these shifts are most important and how they might be combined. According to Hoffman, it's going to be at least a decade before this wonderful pill is available. So, hey, I'll be in my 50s by then. I could use it. But his team and others are making progress. It is not just about dodging the gym and giving people an excuse to slob out on the sofa, and I'm going to put a little aside, and be addicted to their computing devices and the TV, high fructose corn syrup, and all those other things that are bad for you. No. It even says the sofa, giving people an excuse to slob out on the sofa. An exercise drug could offer a host of benefits for the elderly and those who struggle with obesity, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular diseases. And yes, we discovered a long time ago that those quote-unquote Western diseases have been shown through studies to be caused by a suppression of the cytochrome P450 enzyme, which is also abbreviated the CYP450. And there's been shown a direct correlation between that suppression of the CYP450 and the ingestion of glyphosate. Thank you very much, Monsanto. But don't worry about it, because we have some of this new mad science gone mad pills to fix what ails you. So eat all of the GMO that you want, and we'll take care of the rest. It's pretty insane. For anyone who cannot physically exercise in the normal way, Nana, a drug that generates the same effects could be life-changing. Another recent study published in, quote, the Trends in Pharmacological Sciences, unquote, looks at the current state of exercise pill research. While some drugs are showing progress in one specific area, no one is close to the magic formula yet, and a formula that would mimic all of the benefits of exercise in a single tablet. I mean, this makes me think of freaking, I want to say Marty Feldman, but not Marty Feldman. What's his name? Little Jewish guy with glasses and curly hair that makes movies. Sleeper. Oh, I don't even remember. Come on, a Cupid doll. We haven't given one of those away at UCY in a while. What is his name? He makes movies. He hasn't in a long time. But the movie was called Sleeper. He went to sleep for like 1,000 years, and he came out, and they had the Orgasmatron. Yes, that's what this makes me think of, is the Orgasmatron. It'll be the Exercise Matron pill. Oh, anyway, finish this off. Everyone is looking for a pill to replace exercise, but we are not there yet. I am not going to make a couch potato into Arnold Schwarzenegger, says the study co-author Ishmael Lair from the University of British Columbia in Canada. Bad luck, guys. So there you go. So you might not look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but hey, you don't have to get up off the couch anymore. Within 10 years, they're predicting. So check that out. All right. Another thing I want to hit here. So one other big topic we looked at when we were looking at food and edible vaccines and all that other stuff was how the things that we eat, the RNA that is in the food that we eat, when our cells ingest the food that we eat after it goes through the small intestine and is absorbed into the bloodstream, our cells actually absorb the RNA and DNA from that food. And those edible vaccines that they've been experimenting with way back, I believe it was in the 80s, they had started with the edible banana, and I don't know, that didn't quite work out for them. Then they had an apple. Then they had a potato, and we kind of pointed out how interesting now that we have these GMO apples and potatoes that hit the market using the same sorts of technologies as these edible vaccines, switch flipping RNAi. So that seems somewhat suspicious to me. We also had lettuce vaccines as well as rice vaccines that currently are in development. Well, I had found a story out of Discover magazine. This is from September 21st of 2011, believe it or not, titled, "What you eat affects your genes. RNA from rice can survive digestion and alter gene expression." So if there ever was a question in your mind that RNA from food can get into your bloodstream and into your cells and alter your genetic makeup, here's the proof in the pudding. It says, "What's the news? It is no secret that having lunch messes with your biochemistry." I'll go back again. "It is no secret that having lunch messes with your biochemistry, and once that sandwich hits your stomach, genes related to digestion have been activated and are causing the production of many molecules that help break down food. But a new study suggests that the connection between your food's biochemistry and your own may be more intimate than we thought." Well, who would have thunk it? "Tiny RNAs, usually found in plants, have been discovered circulating in blood, and animal studies indicate that they are directly manipulating the expression of genes." What's the context? Well, microRNAs, or miRNAs, are molecules involved in the regulation of gene expression, the transcriptions of genes into proteins. miRNAs bind to messenger RNAs, which are mRNAs, that ferry genetic information from DNA to your ribosomes, which translate messenger RNAs into proteins. When miRNA binds to a messenger RNA, it keeps from being translated and thus preventing that gene from being expressed. This team of researchers from Nanjing University have been studying the miRNAs that circulate in human blood and were surprised to find that some of the miRNAs weren't homegrown, but instead came from ingested plants. And one of the most common plant miRNAs was from rice, which is a staple of the Chinese diet. intrigued, they confirmed with a variety of tests that in mice that miRNA in its native environment usually regulates plant development, and it was definitely coming from the food. And when they put rice miRNA into cells, they found that levels of a receptor filter that filters out the LDLs, which are your bad cholesterols in the liver, went down. So as it turns out, the miRNA was binding to the receptor messenger RNA and preventing it from being expressed, sending receptor levels down and bad cholesterol levels up. When they saw the same effect, when they tried it in mice. So basically what they're saying is that they made a direct correlation to eating the certain type of rice. The miRNAs that are in the rice, they said, couldn't come from anywhere else but in the rice. They found that it was sending the signal messenger, and it was causing their bad cholesterols to rise in their body through a genomic process. Going further, when they fed the rice to mice, but also gave them a molecule that would turn off the miRNA, so that's RNA interference, the liver receptors bounced back and bad cholesterol levels went down. So, oh great, this means that if they made a genetically modified rice grain that had some sort of molecule that turns off the miRNA, made a nice genetically modified rice grain, and then fed it to people, it'll be healthy rice now that doesn't affect their cholesterol. So what does the future hold? Well, it says it's only logical that what we eat has an effect on the expression of our genes. And in the general sense that nutrients from food are involved in these cellular processes that control and are controlled by gene expression. But this is an unusually direct route and surprising from an organism that is so different from mammals. And I'll tell you what, that is one reason why I throw up every red flag that I have in regards to this mad science gone mad right now with GMO foods and vaccines, because it is using the identical technology of switch flipping within your cells to be able to get some desired result, except that they have only been doing these tests in animal models, and now we have so many. I think I saw now that last count was over 300 and some vaccinations, just vaccinations. Who knows what it is at Monsanto's level, but vaccinations that are using RNAi technology as well as some of this nanotechnology with virus-like particles and such that they need to get into phase 3 human testing. The only way currently to do that is to declare an emergency. But now by passing this 21st Century Cures Act and fast-tracking it all, just like they are with GMO foods, and apple is an apple, a potato is a potato, they'll be able to get it into all of us without any delay. Let's read the last paragraph of the story. Since miRNAs from plants haven't been on scientists' radar before, well, no, not before they were testing food vaccines, though, this should be a field ripe for further exploration. Do corn miRNA circulate in the blood of people in societies that eat gigantic quantities of corn, like in the U.S.? Yes, and they should have added gigantic quantities of GMO corn, where 88 or 90% of all corn consumed in the United States is GMO. Be very interesting to see. And I think that that is probably where a lot of this suppression of the CYP450 enzyme is coming from as well, if the glyphosate research study is any indication. All right, so to continue from here, I wanted to take one more look at Mad Science Gone Mad. So we talked about the story yesterday with their brand new discovery of utilizing a vaccine that goes in and turns cellular muscles in animals and in the future to be humans. They even mentioned that. Cells of muscles, it turns them into factories for a hormone and I don't remember the name, GN, and then there were two letters after that, but it was a hormone that allowed the maturation of eggs and sperm cells, and they were going to be utilizing that as a sterilization vaccine in feral animal populations, and soon to be feral human populations, would be their hope. I had also mentioned, though, that there was another project, and one of the things I need to look into is if there is any connection between these two, because I almost think that when I first saw that RNA vaccine for animals, well, they call it a DNA vaccine, but it still messes with your genomics, so let's just put it in one big clump. When I first read about that story, I am pretty certain that somewhere along the way, I had seen a Bill and Melinda Gates donation to that project. Well, Bill Gates himself was involved in a project, and maybe they're even the same one. Bill Gates is working on a single-dose, long-lasting contraceptive for women. Hey, imagine that. No remembering to take the pill every day, and I will guarantee you a few years fast forward in the future that this is going to be part of the CDC recommended vaccination schedule along with Gardasil for your child. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has made headlines, and this is from June of 2015, after providing a $5 million grant to help researchers at the Oregon Health and Science University create a long-lasting form of birth control that does not require surgery. According to the foundation's grant announcement, the funding will be used to, quote, develop additional safe, effective, acceptable, and accessible methods of permanent or very long-acting contraception that will fill an unmet need for women who have reached their desired family size and do not wish to become pregnant again. This pretty awesome news for women, it says, who have had as many children as they want. Yeah, so they're going to market this to people who don't want to have to get their tubes tied, but I will guarantee you that somewhere near they're going to market this to third world feral nations. It's pretty awesome news for those women who've had as many children as they want and either have to take a pill every day, use condoms, regularly rotate hormonal implants until they hit menopause, or convince their partner to have a vasectomy. But the grant has also met with criticism from pro-life organizations because of concerns that such long-term forms of contraceptive could be used to what? Oh, control who and who does not reproduce. Now, one of the things I want to mention about that, and we connected this a long time ago, that is one of the end result concerns for me once they slice and dice us and get us all into large, uniform, cloud-based databases, running algorithms on all of your physical traits that they know everything about now, down to your genetic makeup. We've discovered in reading many different things that there has been some research that has proven that even bad lifestyle choices, such as smoking and drinking, which we've known, eating bad foods, even stress in your past, can cause genetic changes that can be passed on to your progeny. So how long is it going to be? I mean, we already have health insurance companies that are deciding to charge more, which way back 25 years ago, this was on the table. Insurance companies wanted to charge more for smokers over non-smokers, and that was voted down as discriminatory. Well, now that is not so. They are talking about passing things such as that because smokers, they say, with their risky behavior, puts a bigger tax on the public payout to take care of people once they are sick in the hospital and no longer have any assets to pay for insurance. So if you are a quote-unquote long-term risk, you're either going to pay or you're going to die. And if now all of that information is in a database somewhere, they don't even have to ask you. They don't even have to depend upon your honesty on a questionnaire. They will just be able to decide whether or not you are good breeding stock. And if you are not, then hey, as part of your monthly food allotment that'll be printed out of your 3D printer of nutraceuticals, you will also be getting the sterilization vaccine. That is the future that we are looking at, people. No doubt about it in my mind. That is our children's future, and it horrifies me. All right, I don't want to read too much more of this. I mean, this goes on, and they want to develop all kinds of permanent birth controls, and I'll put that story into the notes, so anyone who wants to read any more of that will be able to. But if this next story will load, there's some brand spanking new research from 2 days ago out of the brain department. And let's see, I went to the page and it is blank, so I am trying to reload it again. And hopefully I have audio as it's all stopped up on me. But hold on, because if, and it looks like we're going to have a flash crash. Let's load. Do, 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 do. Maybe if I do a juju dance. Oh, let's load. Oh, my God. All right, here we go. Stop now. Stop. I can see. I can see. All right. The only thing I have to do now is get up to the title of the article, if it lets me. Oh, it's amazing how this machine, even with my bumped up internet, is like syrup. It's called Connections in the Brain, Like Fingerprints Can Identify Individuals. Now, we have gotten into a lot of the DARPA research that has been done over the last 10 or 20 years. A lot of it used to be under the covers. Now they're just coming right all out, full frontal, telling you about how it's going to be to cure soldiers that have PTSD and other brain injuries because they fought in the many orchestrated wars that we have going on every single front. Those people who, when they get out of high school, couldn't find a job, but they had this big dangling carrot from the military promising them to be able to be travel the world and get a good education through the military. Yes, those same people who then come back and are fully abandoned and put into government health care to go onto death waiting lists and become part of the experimental machine. Yes, those same veterans. Well, hey, guess what? With part of the Brain Project now, that is an international consortium of universities, hospitals, and national agencies in this country, such as the National Institutes of Health, as well as technology companies, as well as Google, Microsoft, and others. Yes, that Brain Project, they have now come up with some pretty interesting information. Each unique person has a unique brain pattern, and you can identify people by their DNA, fingerprints, personal preferences, and behavior. But new research out of Yale University has shown that we have another unique identifier, and that is how our brains work. Now, remember, too, the end result of learning all the discoveries about the brain not only is to be able to see your thoughts, because they're already working on that, and we saw some research not too long ago where they can actually read your dreams already, but the 2045 project, that originally one of the ones out of Russia, was funded by a Russian billionaire, but now they're all on board this immortality project, is to be able to upload your brain to another framework, whether it be to the machine, to a robot, to the internet, so you and your consciousness can live forever. Says, quote, "We all have this intuition that people are unique, and we all have our own strengths and weaknesses, our quirks and personalities, and what we're good at and how we handle things," says co-author Emily Finn, a PhD student in neuroscience at Yale. "And it is very easy to observe that from the outside, but it is pretty hard to find the correlation in brain activities. And yet, it is the brain that makes those differences possible." Knowing this, Finn and her co-author, Zilian Shen, an associate research scientist at Yale, used fMRI, which is the functional magnetic resonance imaging, to see if our brains each have a unique fingerprint that could distinguish one person from another. So screw that. Even if they get down to the point of biometrics where you got to log in with your iris scan or your fingerprint, or even Windows 10 uses your bodily movements and the way you type, even if you manage to find ways to hack around all those, you won't be able to fake your brain activity as you walk through the fMRI to be able to authenticate your identity. I mean, this guy's, and I mean, even beyond that, someday it's going to be just a cheek swab for your genetic imprint to be able to get online or authorize you for your food qubits, you know? So anyway, they're calling this the brain ID. So this is going to be even beyond any type of universal ID like Brandon Turville has written about many different times. The brain ID. To get a glimpse at the way specific parts of the brain function in real time, scientists use fMRI to repeatedly scan a person's brain while they complete a specific task. And I'm sure that that's really healthy for the brain. The non-invasive technique measures the amount of blood flowing to certain parts of the brain. More blood indicates more activity. And most fMRI studies average brain functions over a population, which lets scientists learn what parts of the brain work under certain circumstances. The convention among scientists, Finn says, was that it was hard to get meaningful information out of a single person's fMRI scan. But that's when they challenged conventional thinking. They scanned the brains of 126 willing participants again as part of the Human Connectome Project. And we've talked about that. It is a subset of the Brain Project and is also sponsored by the National Institute of Health as well as others. You can get to their website at humanconnectomeproject.org if you want to read more about that. Says they scanned the brains of 126 participants in the Human Connectome Project while they performed several different tasks. They mapped the connections in the prefrontal cortex and the parietal lobes, recently evolved parts of the brain involved in complex functions like attention and language, which I wonder if they found that when they were playing with their mobile devices or watching television, that that part of the brain went gray. Right, we found out in research they've discovered that the human attention span is now less than of a goldfish because of our connection to electronic devices. But they did this anyway to develop connectivity profiles of each person, and they found that each person's brain activity profile was indeed unique. The same brain doing two different things always looks more similar than two different brains doing the same thing, Finn said. And it's something that maybe seems intuitive outside the field, but it is something that no one has ever been able to show. But they published their research this past Monday in Nature Neuroscience. Beyond proving that each person's connection profile was unique and distinguishable from another person's, Finn and Shen also looked to see if it was possible to use profile data to accurately predict someone's performance on a test. Now, as we remember that the head of the National Institute of Mental Health has just gone to Google subsidiary within Alphabet, and we learned that Obama is creating a new division and hiring some new people in the psychological spinning department of propaganda for the government. And we also remember that we have now some sorts of online and voice pattern diagnoses of mental illness. This starts to get very scary. And once you start databasing all this information, not only are they going to be able to tell by your genomics whether or not you're good breeding stock and what you're doing that you're not telling them and whether or not you're taking your medication, but they'll also be able to tell how you're thinking, what you're thinking. And it says here, to measure performance, they developed the first predictive model. So if we start looking at Minority Report, we see that Minority Report will be something in our future, in the not too distant future. So to measure performance, they first developed a predictive model. They then 126 times removed one subject's profile and put the remaining 125 through their model to see if they could accurately predict the person's performance on a test that measured reasoning and the ability to see patterns. Because they had the subject's actual test results, they could see how well the model stacked up and found that it was able to predict performance in a statistically significant way. And yes, let me translate that. Because they already had the performance results, when they tried to predict it, they were using, ding-da-da-ding, one of the big keywords in all this databasing, the algorithm. It was more accurate than chance, she said. But it was certainly not perfect. Now, remember, too, the next step of all this is building a model of the human brain and utilizing supercomputing and cloud computing to build some sort of super AI. So there is no happy ending to any of this shit. And for as much as they sell it to you that it's going to cure Alzheimer's, the epidemic that we have all over this country that, whoops, might end up being contagious, they've now discovered. Because it's malformed proteins, prions, very much like mad cow disease that they totally missed after all these years. You know, don't worry about it because we'll be able to fix all that ills you. Anyway, let's wrap this sucker up. She says, I think doing this type of work and pushing the boundaries of what we can get out of one person's scan is the first step down the road to make this brain scanning technology have real world applications. And that should leave some hair standing on your arms. Now, if I could do this really super quick, I had one link I wanted to play, and I might or might not make it because every page is loading like syrup here. But if not, maybe we'll kick off the show tomorrow. I had a video. If you want to go down the path of smart devices, and damn it, this just might not let it go. There was a brand new smart device, and I don't think I'm going to find it. There was a brand new smart device that came out yesterday. Maybe we can if it loads, if it loads. I'm almost out of time. Damn it, right to the wire. Well, it actually takes smarty pants, and we'll have to do it tomorrow. It takes smarty pants to a new level. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. Josh is live at 6 p.m. Eastern tonight. The boys from New York, Continued Condition, Jonathan and Steven live at 8. Truth or Talk of April and Verstein tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. And then we have Anti-Media Radio with Mr. Nick Burnaby, D.B. Schwartz and crew at 11. I am not hearing my bumper, so maybe for some reason, there we go. It's really late. All right, guys, you have an awesome Wednesday. I hope I gave you some food for thought. Do some research, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow.